This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's 7:34 a.m. on this Monday, December 31st, as we count down the remaining hours of 2018. Thank you so much for staying with us here on The Morning Run. Now, global stocks are set for its worst year since 2008, with the VIX back in the mix. That's volatility for you. So on the line now, we have Stephen Innes, Head of Trading for Asia Pacific for Owanda in Singapore. Good morning, Stephen. So let's kind of take stock about the market moves, the wild swings that we saw in U.S. stock market last week. What do you make of all those moves?
Yeah, the swinging just wildly, and this is amid diminished liquidity and conditions at year-end demand with the position rebalancing tends to create this. So investors are left doing battle against the tape on a daily basis, really without any pushback from big institutional investors. Who usually step in front of big moves, lower or higher. So it's creating that outside exaggerated moves we're having in the market. And, you know, we're hoping that things will calm a little bit once the full complement of participants returns in the new year, maybe not this week, but the following week. Although we remain very wary of all the various unknowns we're dealing with. You know, obviously the market's starting to focus on U.S. economic data, and I think there's going to be more outside negative moves on weaker data. Yield curve interpretations, which is continuing to panic investors as the inverted yield curve historically has pointed to a recession, but I don't think it's this case this time yet. Investors still remain very, very wary. And then we've got this political noise that's coming out of Washington right now. We only expect that to get louder because in January the Democrats officially take office, and we think there's going to be more of these Trump investigations and what have you. So the political malaise in Washington is likely to get bigger rather than smaller.
Now, Stephen, also in your recent note, you say that market conditions are of the Bohemian Rhapsody type. I love that. And you said that, you know, nothing really matters, right? So, look, you know, so flip it on its head for us then. What has to happen before markets will calm down and really focus on the things that really matter?
Well, I think, first of all, there's been a lot of spin going on in the markets about the recent Fed hike and how it's going to play out really negatively for the U.S. economy. I think what we have to really take note of is the U.S. economy is doing quite well, so we have to look at the data pretty closely. We also have to look at what data is coming out of China, and that's actually worrisome. I think the slowdown in China is probably one of the biggest risks. Economic risks we're going to be facing in 2019. And this is real concern. And we know that the European economy has been slowing. So I think the biggest risks as a whole is going to be this global slowdown. However, if the U.S. actually does slow down, I think the equity markets are going to be in a world of hurt simply because the U.S. has been carrying risk sentiment. It's on its shoulders for the last year simply because the markets, and among other things, have been benefiting from Trump fiscal policy. And if that starts to fade, then we've got some serious issues in the equity markets. Unfortunately, I don't have a lot of good to say right now. So this is the problem. The market is very, very negative looking. However, that can easily be corrected, as I mentioned, with some positive run of positive data suggesting that we've hit bottom. A soft bottom rather than a hard bottom globally would be great.
Stephen, as we draw closer to the 90-day tariff truce, to the end of the 90-day tariff truce, President Donald Trump tweeted, as he usually does, saying that the talks are making big progress. Could we see a major resolution to this trade war within the next couple of months? And what is your base case at the end of this 90-day truce?
Well, it would be great. That would be one of the great things if we could get the a roadmap at least put together down on paper as to which direction this trade war is going to go. My fear, however, is even if we reach peak tariff and we've hit the end of the tit-for-tat tariff war, I think we're moving into another level of trade war, which is going to be decided around technology intellectual property rights and the theft of U.S. technology know-how. Not only that, I think the U.S. administration is really looking closely at China's expansion, global expansion through the Belt and Road Initiative, which seems to be lending a lot of money to a lot of impoverished countries who are, it's very impossible for them to pay back and creating these debt traps. Ultimately, China ends up pulling these loans and ending up taking over swaths of land like they did in Sri Lanka, where they took over a port in a very strategic area next to India. So these are security risks that the U.S. is still going to be going after China. So I don't, although, you know, we could see a resolution, the tit-for-tat trader. I don't think U.S.-China tensions are going to ease in any significant way with all these issues that are still looming in the forefront with regards to technology, intellectual property rights, and obviously global security as far as the U.S. is concerned.
Now, Stephen, that's on the external front. Let's shift over to the domestic front, because also this past weekend, you had the central bank officials in China who said that monetary policy will remain prudent, and that perhaps goes against some expectations of more easing in 2019. So I think in your recent note, you also highlighted that economic growth, that is going to be China's most significant risk for 2019. So how do you interpret those PBOC comments?
I think there's two things. I don't think they want to overheat the economy because we know that they've been painstakingly deleveraging a lot of the asset bubbles, or trying to deleverage a lot of the asset bubbles in mainland over the past year. Also, I don't think they necessarily want to weaken the RMB to any great degree, simply because it's bad optics in the middle of a trade war. U.S. won't like it, but also we have to remember that China is also trying to shore up their capital markets, attract money into the capital markets, and the last thing you'll want is a weaker currency, because that's really a negative for investors. Nobody wants to invest in a country whose currency is weakening. And that's a major concern. Now, how are they going to address that? Well, they seem to be moving towards applying more fiscal policy. In other words, offering large tax cuts. We saw how successful these tax cuts could be over the short term in the U.S. So this could be something that they're looking to do as a short-term fix. And also, I think they've got pretty deep war chests as far as spending, as far as being able to pump the infrastructure. So I think they could continue to pump the infrastructure. Then again, when you start reading some of these articles that tend to float out of China about these cities that have all these buildings that are uninhabited, it's quite concerning that they're building all this stuff, but nobody's using it. So where do you go? Yeah, it's between a rock and a hard place. Really, they don't want to overinflate the economy. They don't want to create these asset bubbles, but certainly they need to get the consumer spending again, and I think that's what they're hoping. They're trying to do something on the demand side of the equation rather than rely on the brick and mortars, what they have traditionally done. So they're looking for consumers to get them out of this rally rather than exports.
Stephen, also back home in Malaysia, we are quite concerned about the ringgit, which hasn't had a good year. It's strengthened recently on the back of a weaker dollar in spite of a background of falling oil prices. Do you think there would be a sustained decoupling between the ringgit and oil prices into 2019?
Well, you know, there's so much focus, but sometimes over-focus on Malaysia's dependency for oil to generate revenue, and people tend to think we're still back in the mid-2000s. I mean, sure, it's a significant amount, but it's nowhere near, Malaysia's not as nowhere near as relying on oil revenues as what it used to be. I think it accounts for about 15% of the government revenue, but it's still a fair chunk nonetheless. So marginal drops in oil prices, which I think a lot of us are interpreting this as quite odd, because why oil has dropped so much is beyond a lot of fundamental ideas here, because OPEC has cut production, which should have shored up prices. But I think what's been happening of late is that oil has been trading off the hip of risk environment. The risk environment's been quite negative, so oil prices are down. I think my view on oil going forward is that perhaps it could come up a little bit. We could be trading WTI back up at 55 in early 2019, and Brent just at 60 or just above. But getting back to the point, yeah, I think there has been a slight decoupling in oil pricing and the ring it through most of last year. Like, we didn't really see when oil prices were soaring, the ring it didn't really make huge advances because it was going through a lot of political issues. I still think at the heart of the matter, the ringgit is still a lot of the fiscal issues. However, the government's done a great job in transparency, and I think investors really like this, that the government's been up front. Even with the lower oil prices, they came out and addressed the fact that, hey, listen, we're cognizant of oil prices. We had pegged them a lot higher in the last budget, and they're actually coming out and suggesting, front-running these issues, saying, you know, we do see a slight drop, but we're also going to be picking it up in other areas. So a bit of a trade-off. But ultimately, I think what investors like right now is the fact that the U.S. dollar is weakening, but the U.S. dollar is weakening because people think the Federal Reserve Board is going to pause. So I think this is what's benefiting the ringgit overall. A Fed pause, that attracts people into the bond market because the yields are still relatively attractive in five-year Malaysia bonds. So this is one of the appeals here. We're seeing this play also into the higher yielders in the region, like Indian rupee and the Indonesian rupiah, offering substantially higher yields than what the Malaysian ringgit is. These are the first ones that are rallying. Then after investors have consumed their appetite there, then they're floating into Malaysian ringgit. So in a sense, it's coattailing the higher yield currencies in the markets.
And hopefully long may those inflows continue into Malaysian assets. Stephen Innes, hey, thank you so much for your time and your insights, and you have a happy new year. Stephen Innes there, head of trading for Asia Pacific for Owanda in Singapore. Coming up in just a bit, we'll take a look at some of the top business stories to end 2018 on. So stay tuned right here to BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.